It is August 1st, 2019. This is episode 6, the second part of our Columbia Cup 2-part special. I am David Newton, your host of Richetel Talk. And today, I'm going to share some different interviews I did with some fans down at the Columbia Cup. Talked to some people who are really excited about racing and have been for a long time in their lives. I also talked to Don Mock. I interviewed him for the Hydroplane Raceboat Museum. Talked about some of the hydroplanes they brought over, specifically the Atlas Van Lines. They had both Atlas Van Lines there, first time ever. I also interviewed the creator of the Love the Try logo and also official for Water Follies, Mike Denzel. I'm going to give you a race recap of the Columbia Cup. I'm going to preview the Seafarer Regatta race. We're only a few days away from Seafarer. Also, I hope you've subscribed to my podcast on your podcast app. I'm also going to remind you, please rate and review the podcast. It's going to help myself out to see how the fans like the show, but also to show other fans how much you're enjoying this podcast. I hope you're comfortable. Sit back, relax, and welcome to Richetel Talk. Listeners, I wanted to start today's episode with my interviews with the fans that I met down at the Tri-Cities, down at the races. Tri-Cities is probably one of the more unique stops on the H1 Tour. There's a lot of tradition, a lot of history there, and a lot of diehard fans that really pack in the the grandstands, the shorelines of the Columbia River there. And I got a chance to talk with a few of them, and I wanted to share some of their experiences, memories, and what's so special to them about the Columbia Cup. The first interview I have is with a man named Dan Miller. He's a lifetime hydroplane fan, from the Seattle area. And he actually flew in for one day with his daughter and son-in-law just to watch the races and take it in. All right, well, I'm sitting on the shores of the Columbia River here with longtime hydroplane fan Dan Miller. And Dan, how long have you been following hydroplanes for?
I know 67 years that I've been following it, that I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in White Center, Seattle. So, again, and spent the summers all week long when the boats were qualifying all week long. My cousin lived in Rainier Valley, so we'd go over and spend there, ride our bikes down to the lake, come back home.
Yeah, fun times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got to ask you, my dad, he towed a boat behind his bike. Did you do that as well?
Oh, yeah. In fact, my uncle was he worked for Pocock, the Shell, Racing Shells, and he built us, they look like a absolutely replica of these hydroplanes, and we towed those behind our bikes, and he made me one for my 50th birthday.
Oh, fun.
And it's sitting on a shelf. I mean, I can't imagine doing that, and he just, nothing to it. He loved us kids, so yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How long have you been coming over to the Tri-Cities from Seattle?
Oh, I've only been over here a handful of times. This is my first time back in quite a few years.
Yeah.
My first time was in 69, and then I went for about 5 years, and we've had a little bit of a break, but...
All right. Well, what are some fun memories you have around hydroplanes in the Seattle area or when you came over here to Tri-Cities? Favorite races, favorite teams, any memorable times?
Well, the first time we came over here was just kind of memorable because 69, you had the Vietnam War going, all the war protest songs, and to come over here with rock and roll blasting and then to this beautiful set. I mean, I was blown away with the setting.
Yeah.
And the old Thunderboats then.
Oh, yeah.
No turbines. So, again, it was amazing. Lake Washington, I think probably my most memorable was seeing Bill Muncy just right out in front of us knock the Coast Guard, put a hole in the Coast Guard boat, and both of them went down. And it was just, to see that, it was just unbelievable as fast.
Yeah.
Like I say, in 5 minutes, they were both gone. So,
yeah.
So that's one of my memorable moments.
Oh, I'm sure.
Many, all the years on the lake, family, and that's the thing. My father and my old brothers and sisters started it. Now it's my family, my grandkids. So it's just an amazing family event.
Yeah.
And I see you brought your family with you, and you flew in for the race, you said.
Yeah. My daughter works for Alaska Airlines, and we just went to the airport this morning, caught a Horizon plane over. We're going to fly home this evening and back to watch TV tomorrow,
All right, well, before I go, who are you rooting for this weekend?
I think Jimmy Shane. I'd love to see him pull it off. And again, if you get a chance to come over, put it on your list. It's an amazing sight.
Yes,
so
is.
Much closer to the boats.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, and both sides of the river.
Both sides of the river, yes. A little more shade on the Pasco side. I think we're going to sit over there next year.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you, Dan. Enjoy the races.
You betcha. Thank you, Dave.
Next, I chatted with local hydroplane diehard fan David Ramirez. I met David years ago, and every year he steps up his hydro game with his family, his friends, his campsite in the Columbia River shore, with all kinds of hydroplane memorabilia and displays. He always has a nice barbecue. He made some really nice steak this year he shared with me after my interview. And he is such a diehard and hydroplane fan that he comes down. He came down this year on Wednesday evening to set up a spot to watch the races. But let's listen into my interview with diehard fan David Ramirez.
All right, I'm on the shores of the Kennewick side of the Columbia River, and I found a diehard hydroplane fan, David Ramirez. And David, you've lived here your whole life, correct?
Oh, yeah. We've been here, well, pretty much practically all my life. I've been here since I was about 3-4 years old. Born, raised in San Jose, California. Raised there for about 3-4 years, and then we moved over here in about 83-84, attended our first races with my mother, which was a great experience, and I'm so happy that she's now been deceased for the last 4 years, but she has left us a tremendous tradition value that we continue to spread to my family now, and I have children from ages 20 to a 5-month-year-old, and they're wonderful advertisements for this, and they're very good supporters in bringing their friends and keeping the tradition alive.
Yeah, so that's many generations of hydroplane fans here. Have you missed any Columbia Cups since you've been here, 83 or 84?
Unfortunately, I have. There was a time where I stepped back from the sport for a little bit, and that's the time when Bernie had just passed away. So I remember the time when I came in was a time when the transition from the Pistons were turning into turbines, and there was all sorts of commotion. I remember the Pringles and the Budweiser and it was the Miller going deck to deck, hand in hand. What a great watching the fans just going at it, just yelling, rooting for the excitement, the joy that you felt off of it. You'll never feel that. You won't feel that nowhere else but right here in the Tri-City Columbia Cup. I mean, it's a great experience that we hold in the traditional value that we keep continue to bring here and advertise as much as we can to show that love.
Yeah, well, Tri-City, they definitely have a huge fan base and support here for each one.
We're very fortunate in this area. We're very fortunate. I'm thankful for the Waterfall Committee for keeping up the activities and their hard support. There's a lot of volunteer work that goes into this. I help with some of the audio sound systems with Riverside Dave DJing. I also help with some of the rescue personal ops. And then I also help with I help my buddy here that comes over and, you know, get him a spot also, too. You know, we spread the love, and that's what it's about here in the Tri-Cities. We spread the love. So when you're coming down in here and you're walking down the path, all you do is you pop in and you come over on this side of the tent, and you know what? You're invited and you become family here.
Yeah. Well, I hear some boats on the water now, but before we go, who are you rooting for this weekend?
Well, like the one and only, you're talking to super fan Dave here, home street super fan. So we're going for Jimmy Shane, like always, and we're looking at a great year this year. He's doing super. There's some tremendous teams that are out there, and it's looking awesome. So we'll leave it at that. Jimmy Shane, we're looking for you, buddy. Let's do it.
Next, I found a younger group of friends that actually met in a very unique way. They all have a love, common interest of hydroplanes, but they're from different parts of the United States. They met, most of them met online with actually a hydroplane simulation video game called HydroSim. And on there, they have as much fun as the guys race with the real boats, and they have a huge love for the sport. Let's hear my chat with this fun group.
So I'm talking with some younger fans, but I would say they're definitely diehard fans as well. Got five gentlemen here. And what are your names?
I'm Nicholas Miller.
I'm Eddie Canfouche.
Peyton Hopp.
Quentin Miller.
Cy Bowen.
And you're not all from the same area. Where are you all from?
I'm from Mercer Island.
I'm from Buffalo, New York.
I'm from Snohomish, Washington.
Mercer Island, Washington.
Plymouth, Indiana.
All right. Is this your first Columbia Cup you've been at?
Yeah.
In attendance? What are your thoughts so far?
Oh, it's awesome. I've always been told this is the best race to go to in the country, and it's living up to the hype.
Do you have anything to compare it to?
Not really. I haven't been to Valleyfield in a long time, so I can't really compare it to that. Detroit's pretty cool, but this is better.
Awesome. And is this your first Columbia Cup as well, C?
Yeah. I went to Madison my entire life and went to Detroit one or two times, and this is definitely better than both, but close. Madison's a close second.
Close second? All right. I haven't been able to go to Madison yet. I think I might have to do that next year.
Yeah.
All right. And you guys are a bit younger than some of the fans here. How old are you guys?
17.
24.
21.
16.
21.
All right. But you kind of came together something outside of just hydroplane racing. What do you guys do for fun on your computers?
We race on the HydroSim video game. We run seasons, run races all together. It's a lot of fun.
And how does one play that game?
It's a free download from uhlhydroplanes.com, and you can just hop onto the server. Sometimes there's people online. You can just start running laps.
Yeah. And you guys hold seasons that are just like the big boats here, right?
Yeah, we run, last season was the first season we did on the game. We ran six races with all the existing courses that are running this year, and then Detroit, which we have from last year. So, got pretty intense at times.
Alright, and when's your next season start up?
Next season starts from October, and we'll most likely go all the way to about February, March. And we purposely do it during the winter time because that's when the actual hydroplane racing season and just any racing season in general is usually done and over with, so we can get the most turnout for our season.
Yeah. And you were saying earlier you have kind of a scale paint schemes on all of the boats in the video game, right? And you have how many boats do you have on the sim right now?
I would say we have close to about 200 counting both the fantasy and real boats, but we have probably more than 100 of the real schemes as well because we have multiple schemes of the same holes for the different years, and it's really, really, really beautiful to see all those boats in the game.
There's so many people that have figured out how to paint their own boat, so that number just keeps increasing, like day by day almost.
Very cool.
We've got paint schemes coming out all the time.
And you can also watch some of your previous races, I understand. And you had a pretty good Gold Cup race earlier this year.
Yeah. You can go on to the YouTube channel Tom Nineace. That's Mickey's YouTube, and he uploads all the races. We also got just little promos for races and highlight videos and all that stuff. And that Gold Cup final between me and Cy was pretty crazy. I'd recommend watching that one. That was five laps of deck to deck, both of us flying and trying not to crash on the Detroit River's just as rough as it is in real life in the video game. So
very cool. Was that a lot of fun, Cy?
Oh yeah. Running on the outside out of him, deck to deck, slight passes here and there, but really close racing.
All right. So it's a good way to get some hydroplane racing in when you can't go out and watch them in the wintertime, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what about today? Who do you guys have for the final heat? Who's going to win?
I got the U3. Just is the underdog, basically.
All right. One for King.
U12, J. Michael Kelly. Graham Chuckin's going to win.
Not biased at all.
And from what I've seen, Jimmy Shane his boat is just too quick, man. It's got excellent top end speed, especially out of the corners, and it's gonna be hard to beat him. But I feel like if either Kelly or King can get the inside, and if Shane's out in three or four, then they might have a chance.
Yeah, all right, three different.
I know all the guys, and it's hard to argue against Jimmy, but I feel like Andrew's probably gonna have a little bit more to show in the final, like he usually does. There's usually a little more speed in that boat when it comes time to run the final, so...
Yeah, they don't show it all before the final.
No, definitely don't show all of it before the final.
All
right. Well, it's tough to pick, because there's, like, four or five boats that could conceivably win this race, but I'm going to have to go for the U12 Graham Chuckin as well as my pick.
All right. So that's two for Graham Chuckin, so we'll see who's right at the come final time, and hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
not everyone at the Tri-Cities race was from the area. I know a lot of people were there from Tri-Cities, one of those three cities that live there. A lot of people come over and drive from Seattle or up from Oregon to watch the race, but there was actually some international folk there. I talked to a friend of mine. He's from Canada. His name's Paul Omerzu, and I've known Paul for over 30 years. And I sat down and talked with him about his favorite hydroplane moments as a fan and what keeps him coming back every year to the Tri. All right, I'm sitting here with Paul Omerzu in his hospitality tent watching the races. Paul, how are you?
Not bad. Kind of excited about the races today.
Yeah. So, Paul, how many, or what was the first Columbia Cup you went to?
1986.
Okay. And where are you from?
I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
All right. How long of a commute is that to here?
It's about 14 hours.
That's driving?
Yes.
All right. All right. So what makes you take a 14-hour drive to come to Columbia Cup every year?
Just the excitement of the boat races, and it's just something I've always done my entire life. And it's just what I do.
Do you have any favorite memories of races you've gone to?
Well, the first one here in 1986, I'd been to Seattle once before in 83, but it was on a test day and not a lot of boats ran, so I never really got the full impact. We came here in 86, it was a Friday morning. Squire Shop went out down the back straight and then hammered on it down the front straight, and it was like you were at a top fuel drag race.
Yeah.
just the sound is just beating off your chest. The hair on the back of my neck was standing up. And there was car alarms going off in the parking lot. It was awesome. And I said, yeah, this is for me.
Nice, nice. Have you been to any other race sites?
I've been to
race?
Yes, I've been to Seattle, Kelowna, and a couple of races in Las Vegas in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The ones in Vegas were a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's always windy and just a real barren landscape there.
Yeah. Well, you must like coming to the Tri-Cities. You come year after year back to here, right?
Oh yeah, this is a great place to watch. I've heard that San Diego potentially might be a better place to watch, but you can't beat the Tri-Cities. It's great here.
Yeah, you love the Tri, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Do you have any other favorite memories from Columbia Cups gone past?
Some of those races in the 90s, you know, you had really big boat counts, and there was some really great competition with Winston Eagle and Smokin' Joe's and the Budweiser during that period.
Yeah.
And it was just, they were really fun to watch back then. A lot of great drivers back then, obviously.
Right. Well, we got some good drivers today as well.
Yes.
Who are you rooting for this weekend?
Kind of leaning towards Jeff Bernard in the Alberto.
Yeah.
I'm kind of an Alberto fan for a lot of years. And Mr. Tate as well, Andrew. So, you know, they're not a super big team, but they get the job done, as evident as last year winning the championship. So,
yeah.
I like the way he drives too. It's aggressive, gets the job done.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, thanks for talking, Paul. And we'll see you here next year, hopefully.
Sounds good. I'll be here.
I met another diehard fan that's from the Tri-Cities region. He had a really nice setup with his tent area on the beach. I could tell he was a diehard fan. He had Mr. Pringle's race team flags wrapped around his pit area, nice chairs. He had some kind of fencing to fence off his area, so for him and his family. He also had some banners, hydroplane uniforms on display, and a big family to share the race with. Walking down the beach here, I think I found a diehard hydroplane fan. I look around your tent area and I see some hydroplane history almost. What are you displaying here?
Well, we got some Pringles stuff. We've had it for many years. I've got a whole shop full of, I've got a fin from the Budweiser. back on a switch from the turbine to the piston back in the old days. So I've got some of that memorabilia. I've got a whole bunch of buttons I hand out to the kids down here, little kids that back in the good old days, you used to get back behind the boats in the pits there, and they used to give you pins and all kinds of neat stuff. Yeah, so that what's got me hooked many years ago. So I buy them from the bulk, and I walk down the roads and give these kids something neat to have, little souvenirs. So
Very cool.
Works out really good.
Yeah. And are you from this Tri-Cities area?
I've been here Tri-Cities for all the races. My dad was the first announcer for KEPR radio back when they really had to work hard down here and do a lot of legwork. But, I heard the thunder when I was probably six or seven, and I have not left it yet. I love these guys.
Oh, yeah, they're fun, aren't they?
The vintage boats you guys bring down are something so amazing. These guys are so cool. Such pretty boats.
Yeah.
They don't build them like that anymore. They're just they're just a neat thing. So it's really good to see those. So,
And do you have a favorite memory from the Columbia Cups of past?
Mainly of family and friends. We're all family and friends down through here. The Waterfallies. I've been down here for so many years. My neighbor over on this side, we've known each other for 15 years. We see each other once a year. It's just amazing. People on the other side, we've been here for years, and we're all just one big family down here. So it's all good memories. Back in the 70s, there were some memories that weren't quite...
you don't remember them too well.
Not too well. So, we're getting a little older and a little wiser nowadays. So, But things have changed down here. We've got so many families. We've got so many kids down here. And that's kind of what it's turned out to be. It's just more of a family thing.
Oh, but, yeah.
I see a lot of people here getting late, and you've got to get here early to get yourself a spot.
That's
and
right.
People kind of... wake up a little late on Saturday morning, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a big family reunion down here.
It's a big family picnic, is what it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, who are you rooting for tomorrow when the final heat comes?
Well, I gotta go with the salami boat. I gotta go with Pringle or
Oberto.
Oberto, that's such a pretty boat, and been here. We used to watch the old men walk down these this road many, many times.
Yeah.
I think the last time I seen him was last year, even the year before. He was like 95, and he was still shaking hands, and people were running to him. It was just amazing. Mr. Oberto, man, it was cool. So I'm glad to see their boat. It's really cool. It's a very pretty boat, too.
It is.
The wrap.
Yeah, the wrap, that looks very, very nice. It's very sharp.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
No, we just have a ball down here. We start Wednesday morning and set our stuff out. We guard it on Thursday, and here we are.
Yeah,
front row.
Very good. Very good. Well, I'm going to have to come back and sit with you for three races.
Well, you bring the beer next time,
there
would
we
you?
Go. I will.
It's hard to get it in here.
All right. Well, enjoy the races.
Unfortunately, I never made it back to Joe's Pits. I couldn't smuggle the beer in. So here's to next year, Joe. There's one thing I know for sure after talking with all of the fans on the beach there, that the Tri-Cities, they love hydroplane racing. There's no doubt about it. From the moment you set foot in the city, it doesn't matter which one it is, Kennewick, Pasco, or Richland, you know it's a hydroplane racing community. I talked a little bit about that with Chip Hanauer, and he noticed the same thing about the Tri-Cities fans, the city, the community, that they love hydroplanes. He even said if every stop on the tour, H1 tour, was like Tri-Cities, that H1 would be stronger than ever. If Tri-Cities race, the Columbia Cup, was your only view into the H1 Tour, you would think that H1 is on top of the world and doing fantastic and not in having any difficulties in any area. But my hats go off to Tri-Cities and the strong community and support they have for H1 and hydroplane racing. After my interview with Brian Perkins, I went down and I watched the Dash for Cash on the dockside. I got some nice video I put on the social media sites of the Spirit of Detroit, the Graham Truckings, taking off in Home Street, taking off from the docks, getting onto the course. I got to watch from the pits, the Dash for Cash. But luckily enough for me, I got an opportunity to meet Mike Denslow. And many of the fans out there may not know Mike Denslow. You might recognize the name Denslow, Chris Denslow. He's a absolutely fantastic photographer. He takes beautiful shots of hydroplanes, always travels around the full circuit to get pictures. He's been doing this for a long time now. But actually, his cousin, Mike Denslow, he has another part of the sport that isn't as well known, I believe. He's a lifetime fan of the sport, but in recent years, he's done his part to contribute to both H1 Unlimited as well as the community that he lives in.
I'm standing dockside on the Columbia River with Mike Denslow. And Mike, I understand you've done a few things in the city, designed a logo, sold t-shirts and other memorabilia with the logo on there. Why did you do that?
Well, I started Love the Tri just to, because I figured out that no one else was selling t-shirts and hats with the Tri-Cities logo on it.
Yeah.
So I started Love the Tri 3 years ago at boat races and gave out some hats and t-shirts to some friends of mine and some of the drivers of the boats and wives and that kind of thing. And it's basically just to have a positive image for the Tri-Cities, and then I donate 100% of the profits back to local charities. So Boys and Girls Club, Domestic Violence Services, the Cancer Center, that kind of thing. And so it's just a passion project. I post photos that people send me of great sunsets, you know. It's social media for the good, which is not always the case.
Right, right.
Yep.
Yeah, we need more of that.
Yes,
definitely
more of that.
Well, I definitely enjoy the Love the Tri logo. I'm wearing a shirt right now, and I got a couple
I saw
more
that,
in,
yeah.
in my suitcase back at the hotel. So.
And I come up with a different design every year. I work with Atomic Screen Printing here in town, and they'll have our latest designs in their booth. So you got to get this year's model.
I guess, what can you describe this year's logo?
Yeah, it's got the blue blaster, and it's got the Wing Wonder on it, and the bridge.
It's
cool.
Very cool. Very cool. And I understand you've lived here most of your life.
Yeah, I'm born and raised here, and I grew up here, and then raised my family here. And I've been, I guess the reason you're finding me on the dock is that I've been president of the boat races here a few times, and was on the H1 board for a while, and involved with the Home Street sponsorship and all those kind of things. So I've been knee deep in it for a long time. It's in my blood.
And what draws you to the hydroplanes? What do you love about the sport?
It's funny. I think it's just I grew up with it, and we grew up one house off the river in Pasco, and so it was always a family reunion every year. And then, so I was on the Pasco side for years, and then they roped me into helping on the Kennewick side. And then you start to learn the teams and meet the teams and the drivers and the owners and their wives and their kids.
Yeah.
And then it changes the weekend completely. Then you're excited for when the race is over because you know everybody's safe.
True.
Because I've calmed a lot of wives and of people that have had accidents on our river.
Yeah.
And I'm over there sitting with them at the ambulance. And it's a part of the sport. But now since I know everybody, it's like, okay, I'll get over there and help where I can kind of a thing. But it's community. It's the Tri-Cities community.
Yeah.
We're synonymous. Boat races and Tri-Cities. It's same thing.
Yeah. It's definitely a big community event over here.
Oh, it's huge. It's the largest, I think, in Eastern Washington as far as attendance and then the amount of money that brings into the community for local businesses. It's great.
Yeah. Do you know what kind of attendance they get here?
Typically, it's around 60 to 75,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very
over
good.
The 3 days.
Great.
Yep.
All right. Well, I got to ask you before you go, do you have a favorite memory of a Columbia Cup or a hydroplane races here?
Yeah, well, Pay Impact was my favorite boat. The Wing Wonder was my favorite boat. My first memory is probably about 73 when they won here. And then, but the Bill Muncy flying start in the Blue Blaster, that blew my mind. I mean, that was great. I also remember Chip in the Squire getting on the inside of Gene Chenoweth and passing him in the last turn for the win.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot.
Yeah, a lot of fun times.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike, for the interview.
Hey, thanks.
Good talking with you.
Yep. Thank you.
I'm gonna look for those Love the Tri shirts.
All right. Thanks.
What a great thing that Mike Denslow has done in both helping the Water Follies and H1, but also donating all the proceeds to local charities. That's not something that you hear very much anymore. And it's all I can say is we need more Mike Denslows in the world for both H1 hydroplane racing, but also just to make our communities better places and make our cities a better place. All right. Well, I had a fun time, as always, in the Tri-Cities. I want to talk about the race. I want to recap some of the things I saw, some of the action out there. It was a great race, a lot of fast heat racing. But before I get onto that, I want to talk a little bit about qualifying. In qualifying, the Miss Home Street, it once again showed its dominance, its fast speeds. It qualified over 163.5 miles an hour. I predicted that this race, because it's such a fast race course, 2.5 mile long in length, that there would be three boats over 160 miles an hour. Unfortunately, I only got one of them correct. Jimmy was the only one to reach the 160 mile an hour mark. The next closest was 158 miles. The U1 Delta Real Track was 5.5 miles off pace from the top qualifier. And that's a pretty big margin to have there, 5.5 miles an hour slower than the next competitor. It reminds me of a lot of the Budweiser racing days. I think Home Street, in a lot of ways, is filling that position. But with the racing, when that happened later on in the day, the qualifying went out the window. It's a different game qualifying is than racing. So many more factors come into play with racing. Everyone that predicted Home Street to win, which seemed like the obvious choice, we were wrong. And I'll get more into that later on. But overall qualifying, it wasn't as exciting as I was hoping it would be. Boats didn't quite live up to the expectations I was hoping for. The only other noticeable qualifier, I would say, is U11. They qualified 154.5 miles an hour with Jamie Nielsen in the seat for the first time in their race boat. He's raced Unlimiteds before, races Grand Prix and other classes, but for the first time that weekend to be running the U11, feel comfortable with the hull, and he actually qualified 2 miles an hour faster than that same boat did last year. That was impressive. That was the other notable piece I would put there. But outside of that, that was kind of your standard qualifying session. Nothing else too exciting there. Before we get into the racing action, I want to talk about more about the 99.9. I interviewed Brian Perkins on Friday. I was really, really disappointed. The experience they had on the first day with the hull, first not being able to get on the race course because of a issue with getting the motor spooled up. And then the second time on the water, first time on the course, the escape hatch fell off the boat for Brian. That was, in a lot of ways, it's kind of devastating. They had to scramble and retrofit another escape hatch to fit on there. But I can't say enough that I'm just so happy that Brian was safe and there wasn't a more serious injury for him. It could have been so much worse. Anytime there's something like that happens, you are just so happy that the drivers are safe. Just to show you how the community and family-oriented and friends, how close the hydroplane racers are, on Saturday, a 5-liter flipped, and I was in the pits when it happened. As soon as it happened, all the race teams, didn't matter if it was Unlimited, Vintage, Grand Prix, 5-liters, whatever, everyone stopped, and their thoughts and prayers were on the driver. It's such a tight-knit community that they don't want to see anyone hurt. It makes me think about different sports that go on, different professional sports such as football. I've known a lot of times that the fans or even people in different organizations, when they see another player get hurt or injured on the field, that people would be excited that person was hurt or injured. They wouldn't think about their well-being. They wouldn't think about that's another person, a human being out there that's in pain and suffering. They think, oh, my team has a better chance to win now. And that's not the case of hydroplane racing. Everyone is so focused and puts such a priority and emphasis on safety first, because it's one big family and community of friends that go out to the races. And before any racing stats or victories, it's about the people. And that just shows you how much everyone cares about one another. And that's one thing that I love about this sport so much. Anyways, talking about the 99.9, they were able to get it patched up. They got the escape hatched attached to the boat. They got it out there for the first heat on Saturday. And they were able to learn a lot about the hull and get a better ride. I believe Sunday morning they were out first on the water, had very smooth water conditions, but the boat ride looked really good. It looked really solid. They put in some quicker laps. It was faster than their qualifying time was that on Friday morning, but they were getting some things worked out with the boat. I know that helps to make any driver more comfortable in racing it, but they're going to continue to learn from their new hull. It might take some time, might not be till next year, but they're going to make it a runner. I believe they'll have that in the front of the pack. All right. Another impression I had from Tri-Cities was some of the drivers. There is some top-notch quality drivers out there, and I can't take the time to talk about every one of them, but I looked at this group of drivers, and they did just a great job of driving all weekend. J. Michael Kelly, Burton Henderson, Andrew Tate, and Jimmy Shane, and they're world first-class drivers. May not always be for the same reason, but they're great drivers, and they know what they're doing, and they do a great job at it. J. Michael Kelly, he usually always gets inside lane. He didn't get the inside lane in every heat this race, but he was able to do what he needed to do to win. And there was a lot of pre-race shenanigans. I love the pre-race shenanigans. That's, to me, part half of the fun watching the race is seeing how the drivers, what they do to jockey for position, the cat and mouse games that they play. And J. Michael, he's always able to get lane one or two, and he did that. He did what he needed to do to get to the finals, got some heat wins, got some points. And in the final heat, he drove lights out. He got lane two, only let Jeff Bernard on the inside of him. And he nailed the start and led him for the first corner and didn't look back. Andrew Tate did a phenomenal job of flying the boat out. Somehow he's able to keep that boat on the edge, but maintain his safety and fast speeds. He wasn't too far back from J. Michael at the finish line, just a few miles an hour speed wise off of catching him. But J. Michael and the team, they found their speed. They did what they did. They got the boat out to be a front runner. And I know it's a lot of that's due to the crew and what they do, but J. Michael, I think, because of him and his driving capabilities, he was able to claim that victory. I give that victory sole on his shoulders for his driving duties there. Burt Henderson, I want to talk for a minute about him. He did a fantastic job of driving as well. He's driving for the Spirit of Detroit, Bonito Homes in Tri-Cities, and will be in Seattle. And this team, they've had this boat for a few years now, but it hasn't quite lived up to its glory days as a Budweiser. I don't think he has the best equipment right now. They're working on getting it closer to that. But for what he's driving, he's doing a fantastic job. He's able to do some moves that were just eye-opening. He's a great driver. I loved watching him in the fourth round. He was playing some cat-and-mouse moves and playing possum, and he was able to sneak inside and get lane one by doing a few different things. It was really fun to watch. I think if he could just find a few more miles an hour, he'd be up there up front and no one could catch him. Hopefully that'll happen for him and we could see some better finishes for him and the Spirit of Detroit racing team. And then Jimmy Shane, as always, he's a great driver. He was undefeated going into the final, had a perfect day going, had some really great heat wins where he kept himself clean, gave the room that he needed, but nothing more, and made it look pretty easy getting to the final heat. But I also want to talk about some other thoughts on things that didn't go as well as I thought they would. The 11, they had a rough time this weekend with some different issues. They had one heat they couldn't get off ground idle, went to go start off the dock, and wouldn't get on plane, wouldn't get off ground idle, so they had to switch motors and go in the next heat. They had another heat where they got really loose in the left turn. Glad they didn't flip it, but they came pretty close to it, and they weren't able to finish that heat, so they did not accumulate enough points to make the final. I thought this was going to be a much cleaner weekend for that 11 team. They would get into the final, have a strong finish, but the Gremlins gets the best of them. So hopefully they put that past them and can learn from that to move on to Seafair. And once again, the U3, Charlie Griggs present Ace Hardware, the Cooper's team, they had strut problems. It's a plague for that team. So they seem to have problems with their props and struts, unfortunately. They were running great. They had really, really great runs. They had 2 second heat finishes on Saturday, beat some faster teams, came really close to staying up there with Andrew Tate. and the Delta Real Track team, they pushed him pretty hard. Unfortunately, Sunday morning, they lost their shaft, their prop. Well, one of the prop blades went through the wing. It sheared the prop off on the shaft. And looking at it, as a spectator, you might not think that, well, it's not that bad of an issue. Put some tape on the wing, put a new prop on it, call it good. I mean, there were some visible cracks you could see on the transom above the strut, which holds the drive line for the shaft and the prop. But it's not a fix they can do at the beach there. They have to take the strut off, take off the exposed aluminum, fiberglass, the honeycomb, and they have to patch that all up so it's a solid piece, because that's a very structural piece for the strut to be attached to. And even though it just looks like a couple cracks and not a big deal, it is a big deal, because if they would have done a temporary fix and gone out there, that it wouldn't have lasted a turn. It would have just fallen apart, and then it would have made more problems. It would have bent the shaft. It could have eventually destroy the gearbox and make problems much more worse. So I'm very unfortunate that they were out. I was really hoping that they would make the final and stir it up. But hopefully next year they can do that. We'll see them again next year, hopefully in Tri-Cities. But once again, I want to talk about the pre-race shenanigans, that milling period. For me, that is half the fun, watching the races. I'm glad that they have a rule where they're not just parking out there, that they're able to move around, maintain some speed, and do some different cat and mouse games, some different shenanigans to get a good start and put others off their marks, and also get the inside lane, which is very crucial for boats who are down on speed and power, as opposed to other teams who are at the top of their game. As a radio-controlled modeler, I don't have experience in the big boats in driving a boat personally. My father made sure that never happened, so I'm never going to step foot in a boat on the water, behind the wheel at least. But I get that feeling when I'm racing radio-controlled hydroplanes, and I've had a lot of fun over the years with certain drivers and the various clubs. I know Dave Brandt and I, we've had who I interviewed in the last episode. I know we've had some fun times playing cat and mouse with each other and messing around with that. That's a lot of fun to me. So I love watching the H1 boats mill around, strategize the different plans that they have to get the inside lane. It's so much fun to see them dicing that around. I wasn't let down with that. There was some great strategies shown and some great maneuvers done. I said Bert Henderson, he did that great move, got the inside in one heat. I know Jeff Bernard and J. Michael Kelly were playing cat and mouse in a few times, and Jeff Bernard won. He got the inside one heat. They almost ran over each other in the third or fourth round. Somehow there wasn't a penalty called on that. I'm not sure what exactly it was, but when you're from the beach, you can't really see everything. It might have been one person going in, one person going out. It might have been both of them, but it was fun to watch that. And also in the final, I wasn't let down with it. They were dicing it up, and J. Michael Kelly couldn't get lane one. Jeff Bernard got it in the final with Alberto, but he did. J. Michael Kelly was lane two, and then Andrew Tate was outside of him. And from the start, J. Michael Kelly and Tate had a perfect start. They were out front. They had a great battle going. Unfortunately for Tate, he didn't quite have the speed to keep up with J. Michael Kelly. And J. Michael Kelly, every lap, just extended his lead by a boat length or two. So at the end, it was just over Rouchetil that he won by. But Andrew Tate tried everything he could and gave on a great show. And the second race that was out there was for third place. Jimmy Shane, he got caught up in some traffic at the start. He didn't have the best start that he hoped for, so it put him back and really took him out of the race. I did predict him to win the race, but I also said in a previous episode that even if you have the fastest boat, it takes more than just speed to win a race. And Jimmy Shane, he's got all the talent he needs to be a race winner and champion. But even the best of them, they don't always get the best starts. They can't bingo the start every time out. And he had one of those final heats where he was behind at the start and he was in the middle of boats and Rouchetails and he couldn't get around them. So instead, Jeff Bernard and Bert Henderson had a great battle going for four laps, and it looked like the Alberto was going to get third place until Jimmy Shane found some clean water, and he was able to reel him in on the last lap and get past them both for third place. So a lot of action out there. It was hard to watch as they had two races going out there at the same time, and you want to watch both of them. But luckily, when you're in person and you're at the race on the shoreline, you can choose where you're looking. You're not stuck watching one or two boats on the TV screen. So congratulations to Jay McElkelly. It was a hard-earned victory. He did a great job to win it. And I'm looking forward to what we'll see here in Seafair, because I think we're going to see some more great racing. But before we get on to talking about Seafair, I want to talk about the museum's vintage display that they put on. And it was a treat this past weekend at the Columbia Cup, because they had something that had never happened before in the history of hydroplanes. The museum has two Atlas van lines that they restored. They restored the 1982 Atlas van lines, which is actually owned by John Goodman, and they also restored the 1977 Muncie Atlas van lines. And this was the first time that they were both on the water running at the same time. Very cool sight to see. A lot of people on the shorelines were excited about it. A lot of the fans were super pumped to see both Atlases out there. And on Saturday, for whatever reason, I didn't watch them on Friday. I was busy doing interviews and whatnot. But on Saturday, I got to see them run both times. And I was pretty surprised how fast the 77 Atlas was going. They were going pretty quick. David Williams, he was going a bit too fast. I heard rumors on the GPS they had that he got up over 146.7 miles an hour. And for the vintage boats, you don't want to be going that fast to wreck any of the equipment. But he was having a good time, and he was getting some speed out of there. It was pretty cool to see that boat up to speed. And there was a couple of passes there where he was moving it, and the crowd was loving it. They were cheering pretty loud for him. But going down there and seeing the vintage boats in the pits, I found Don Mock, a longtime friend and fellow RC boater. And he is a volunteer at the Hydroplane Race Boat Museum who's helped restore many hydroplanes. But we talked together about the Atlases being there and the vintage boats. So let's listen in on my interview with Don Mock. All right, well, I'm talking to Don Mock here at the Columbia Cup. And he is the team manager of the two Atlas van lines from the Hydroplane Race Boat Museum. And Don, can you tell us a little bit about what Atlas van lines these are?
This is crazy, yeah. We, probably thanks to your dad, years ago, it was 2002, we restored the 1982 Atlas van lines, and the boat that Chip won his first Gold Cup with. Restored that and have been running that since for 15 years. And then back in 2010, we began restoring Bill Muncie's Blue Blaster, which the museum had owned since it came back from the Smithsonian, but it was never restored to run, just mm-hmm. restored to be kind of pretty on the trailer.
Yeah.
And I took charge of that restoration. It's one of my proudest accomplishments. And I'm going to say, talk about your dad a lot, because I would never done it then, yeah. then for your old man. And for your dad now, just if he could stand on that bank and look down and see both Atlases, yeah. he'd shake his head and laugh. Oh, Don, you and your damn Atlases, two of them, come on. So we've got that Blaster running in 2014. And we pretty much alternated. The plan, the Blaster is owned by the museum.
Yeah.
And so the budget on that one's tough. I've had to watch the nickels on keeping that happen.
Because yeah.
we got to pay for it. John Goodman, a very wealthy car racing businessman in Seattle, owns the 82 Atlas. And he's a great owner, because we never see him. I don't even think he knows we got the boat here. We just take it and run it. He just has a... You break it, you fix it.
All right.
Don't tell me.
Okay. All right.
And so we've run them, alternated running them with the Griffin Budweiser usually. Mm-hmm. Then when the paint pack was done, which was a big deal for the museum, thanks to Ken Muscatel, we ran 2 years ago with a paint pack 82 Atlas and the Griffin Bud.
Yeah.
That was our first three Pickle Fork show, and that was really successful and really was a step up for the museum. That's a lot of engines to make work. And,
right.
And all those British Merlins and Griffins, but never had the idea to run two Atlases. You know, I never really wanted to see it. It's not historically, they never could have run together.
Right.
And it just would be weird.
Yeah.
But this happened because the Squire Shop's being restored. The 79 Squire Shop is being done beautifully at the museum under the guidance of Tim Ramsey, who actually was on both Atlas crews.
Yeah.
But they thought they'd be done this summer. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll have it ready by 2019. And David told the race people here and in Seattle, well, yeah, we'll have four pickle forks. And then it got to be wintertime, and there's no way they're going to make it.
Right.
And they looked at me and said, well, we promised him four pickle forks. How do you feel about running both Atlases? I went, no, you know, you can't do that. And I was out bike riding with Chip one day, and we talked about it. And Chip said, well, you're not going to get any younger, and you know you got to do it once.
Right.
See them both together on the water.
Yeah.
So might as well do it now.
Yeah.
So we did. And it has been spectacular that we made it work. And all of our little volunteer crew, none of the guys wearing Atlas shirts over there are trained mechanics on Rolls Merlin engines. They're all model boaters mainly.
Yeah.
And the fact that it took a long time to even get one to run. And now we successfully, as of yesterday, got two to run and got them putting to run great and going very fast. Too fast.
In fact,
they had a meeting last night, so, okay, that's too fast. We've got to get down. We don't need to be crashing boats. So.
Well, I've talked to a lot of fans on the shoreline, and they're very excited to see both Atlases out.
Do they know which is which? Can you tell?
I can tell, but the general fans may not tell as easily, but they're ecstatic to see both of them out there at the same time.
Yeah, David Williams, the director of the museum, who typically drives the Griffin Budweiser, is driving the Blue Blaster, and it's great because he drove it the very first time when we restored it, did the test run at American Lake, and he only got a half a lap before the oil tank puked oil all over the place. And by the time we got it cleaned up, we had to go home. Then we never got to finish his lap.
Yeah.
Chip's always driven it since then. Who's the appropriate guy?
Right.
And David would always have to drive the Griffin Bud.
Yeah.
But the Griffin Bud couldn't come here this weekend. He's running next weekend. So next weekend is the four-boat show, two Atlases, one Griffin Budweiser, one Pay and Pack, and one stunning, startled, scared crew trying to make two Atlases, all these boats run together. It's going to be incredible to happen.
Yeah, so the fans will be in a treat.
So Chip drives his boat. Chip drives the 82 Atlas, which is his... although I like Chip driving the Blaster. I like him both boats. So driving the boats, Chip likes to drive his boat, and his boat is the more modern design. They're essentially the same boat. People ask about the two Atlases, what's the difference? And they really are built off the same plans. Everything's the same except the vented canard idea that he just took the Blue Blaster and cut holes in the deck. That's really all it is. And had a canard now. Angles of attack, everything is pretty much the same, but they did do the anhedral, dihedral sponsons with it inside recovery areas in the sponsons, which widens the stance out. So the 82 Atlas does corner better. We have a nice big skid fin on it, so Chip loves to drive that thing. Yeah. Then David Williams driving the Blue Blaster here. But next week in Seattle, he'll be driving the Griffin Budweiser, and Kip Brown is going to drive the Blue Blaster.
Okay.
And I don't even know Kip very well, but he's been highly recommended and obviously a Gold Cup winner. And he has driven the Pay and Pack with the Merlin, and it'll be great.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be a fun show in Seattle.
It's going to be four on a little 2-mile course.
Yeah.
So hang on. It's going to be three Rolls Merlins and a Griffin side by side.
Right.
It's going to be. You're going to hear that in Puyallup. I guarantee
you. I hope so. Well, I know having both Atlases at the same on the water at the same time is a pretty significant historical value because that never happened in real life. But I believe there's also another historical fact with the Pay and Pack being here as well. Is there some sort of lineage with that?
It was weird. On Friday when we did our first test run, we had all three boats in the water, the Pay and Pack, Blue Blaster, and the 82 Atlas, all nose to stern, nose to stern, nose to stern. And I got off the dock and ran up by the trailer so I could look at this, take it all in. And Will Muncy came over to me, and he just... We start talking about it, and he goes, well, Dad loved that boat, Bill Muncy, of course, the Pay and Pack, because it was an Atlas Van Lines. I didn't win the argument to paint it as the Atlas. I didn't even try that way. And Bill didn't really, the Blue Blaster was this unknown thing, little project Lucero was doing in the background. He wanted that boat. And he'd try the Blue Blaster, but if the Blue Blaster was too complicated or too scary to sit in the front, he had the bullet. He knew he could win all the races with that Pay and Pack hull. And then the Blaster, but Lucero convinced him that this was going to be the race boat of the future. You got to do it, Bill. And when he sold the pan pack to the Madison people, it was like a divorce. You're naked. All of a sudden, you've given away your best boat, and now you're going to risk this crazy, lightweight, flighty, honeycomb aluminum feather and sit in the front with things coming at you pretty fast.
Yeah.
And he did it. Of course, it was very successful until 1981, where it wasn't so successful, and crashed the boat, of course, in Mexico. And what's interesting is that they you know, Atlas was done for a couple months, you know, the trauma of losing Bill Muncy in Acapulco. But the Fran Muncy and Lucero and O.H. Frisbee, who was a wonderful godfather for all of those people involved, said, let's keep going. Let's fix Bill's boat. Let's get another driver. And we know who that's going to be, because Bill always talked about this blonde-headed little kid from Seattle, Chip Hanauer. They called Chip out up in about January and said, I'd like you to drive the Atlas. So, you know, we can fix the boat, but we're also thinking about building a new one, but we can fix the other one. And Chip said, I don't want to drive Bill's boat.
Yeah.
I don't want to, if you want to build a new boat, I'm interested.
Yeah.
Okay, build your new boat. So Chip did influence the decision to build.
Okay.
And so Jim and Sarah already had this design. They were talking about Griffins, but I don't know if that's a fact. I don't know if the 82 was built for... I can't imagine a Griffin in. I think it would sink, go right to the bottom of the boat.
Right.
So they threw that 82 together very quickly. Probably stole a lot of parts off the wrecked Blue Blaster.
Right.
And then 82 was an incredible Phoenix-type season, rising from the ashes with this brand-new boat and this young new driver, and you know how it all ends in Detroit and the famous Gold Cup run. And speaking of your dad, it's one of my crowning achievements was to take the Griffin Budweiser and the 82 Atlas to Detroit back in 2006.
Yeah.
And we ran them there. And I stood on the dock while they came up the backstretch in the Budweiser on the outside, Atlas on the inside. Yeah. Of course, going half as fast.
Right.
But to see the same two boats coming up the backstretch in Detroit with the crowd going nuts over on the grandstands. And I turn around, there's your dad at the top of the stairs, looked like a proud father.
Oh, he was.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
And so, we didn't run that good. We were still having so much trouble with our engines. And this is what makes this so special, is that a lot of the same guys are on the crew now. And we can do one, but Atlas, what's the problem? We'll do two Atlases.
Yeah, why not?
We got another one? Okay, bring them all. So, it's been pretty amazing.
Well, very good. Yeah. Very good. Well, you're putting on a great show here in Tri-Cities in 1 week, and Seafair, you're going to put on another great show. But for some fans who can't make it to the races, they do have opportunities to see these up close and personal at the museum down in Kent. Can you tell me a minute about the museum?
I always wish more people would come to the museum. It's amazing. You meet them every day. I didn't know you had a hydroplane museum. I wish I knew the exact address. It's on 196th in Kent, which is just south of South Center. Can't miss it. And we have a pretty big building. And it is packed with hydroplane stuff. In fact, too packed. Everybody comes in and goes, wow, you guys need a bigger building. There's boats everywhere. But, you know, we're proud of it. We have a shop, and we're restoring the 79 Squire shop in the shop. And we're fixing the sponsons on the Lumberville, which we ran as the Alberto for a long time. Now we don't know how we're going to repaint it, because they may not go back to Alberto again.
Oh,
it may, in fact, be like the Savior's Mist or Probe, or I don't know yet. And then out in the main part of the museum, the Slow-Mo 5 and the 760, I can't even name them all, 67, 68 Budweiser, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary of winning the Gold Cup on Lake Washington in 69. 50 years.
Oh, wow.
50 years this year.
Yeah.
During the, when the guys were walking on the moon, the 68 Budweiser was winning a race out there. It's pretty interesting. But we have, the boats are, of course, beautiful on their trailers, and they're all run, and that makes the museum kind of a funky place sometimes, because we're in there trying to make these boats run, so we're working on things. And there's guys with tools running around, and it's not a little pristine, quiet.
Yeah.
We'd like it to be that sometimes, but it's open 5 days a week. Tuesdays and Thursdays are the popular days, and Saturdays. And just come on in, and they got some great tour guides, or just come and wander around yourself, or come down and grab a hammer and start helping, because we always need volunteer help, and that's how most of us all started, you know. Your dad said, hey, Don, you want to work on a real hydro? I just started doing the models, which he got me started on, too. You want to work on a real hydro? Okay. And that, in those days, there was no museum, but it was starting, but it was at Bob Williams' house in Burien, and I went over there and worked on the Hurricane with your dad. Yeah. And, boy, where we've come from, thanks to him, what the museum is today is we're a bigger organization than H1.
Yeah.
We actually have more boats. I mean, we're fielding, we got six boats here
right
now.
Right.
One organization. Well, five, we'll let Mitch Evans have his own.
There you go.
But he's part of our group, you know.
Oh, yeah. He's part of the family.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, last time I was at the museum, I saw volunteer forms in the lobby. So if you're interested in being a volunteer, you can come check it out, fill those out in the lobby. Or there's also a website.
Oh, the website's okay. We always complain about our website. There's just so much information. Boy, coming in person is great.
Yeah.
And during the winter is when everybody really, that's when it really gets humping. Summertime, everybody wants to run boats and go out in the sun. But, boy, starting about September, October. If you want a really dose of the Hydroplane Race Boat Museum, you go to what's called Mahogany and Merlot in Chelan, first weekend of October. And it's sort of the museum's party. It used to be just sort of a private party. That's where your dad got to drive a couple boats.
Yep. Oh, yeah, he did.
And, but now it's become a full, it's become a big deal event in Chelan, and it's a vintage hydroplane exhibition event with cars on display and vintage Chris Craft, you know, pleasure boats.
Yep.
It just stuff, bands playing, people drinking wine, and it's become a huge deal. And you can see all the museum, because that's where the volunteers all get their rides.
Yeah.
So they got about 30, 40 rides to give.
Yeah, they got a long line
We don't do it. We can't give rides in our Atlases because the cockpits are too tiny and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, but the round noses are set up for that. We squish two guys in there and so they got 30, 40 rides to give. And you have those poor Allison engines. They just keep putting fuel in them and they run like cars. The mechanics at the museum have done such an amazing job keeping, especially those Allisons running. I don't know how they do it.
Well, fantastic.
How about you? You got a ride?
I haven't got a ride yet.
Oh,
no, I'm waiting.
All right.
I'm ready.
Oh yeah, you're way overdue.
Maybe I can get in line in October.
Boat you want to go in? I got some pull there.
Will they bring the Griffin Bud over there? I don't know about that.
They can give a ride because they take out their back seat. So I'll tell Gail White that.
All right.
Tell him that get that Griffin. Right. David New wants to drive.
Well, I'll make sure I'll be there. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing the Atlases on the water and the show they'll put on at Seafair.
We're on it.
All right. Thank you, Don.
You just heard the sounds of vintage hydroplanes taking off from the docks, and including the Atlas Van Lines on the Merlin engine. It's a great sound. I love sharing those audio clips with you out there in podcast land because it's just so fun to hear that sound. Hopefully for others, it just kind of gives you goosebumps and gets you excited to hear that sound. It's part of why the sport is so much fun. All right, well, I want to talk about Seafair. It's Thursday, Seafair week. We're going to have the boats on the water tomorrow. And I have a few takeaways from the Columbia Cup. Unfortunately, we're down two boats. There's only going to be an 8-boat field at Seafair this year. Both the 440 and the 3 are out. The 3, the Cooper's team with the turbocharged Allison, I don't know if they were actually planning on attending Seafair, but they... Either way, they can't now. They broke their strut. They broke parts of the boats. They're going to be going back to Evansville, Indiana, doing some repairs and hopefully make it out to some more races next year. But also the Bucket List Racing U440, the little team that could, is not going to make it either. They had some prop issues. They broke a shaft and a few other things, which they don't have spare parts for and they can't have made in time. A lot of the parts on the hydroplanes, you can't go down to Lowe's or Ace or to other or parts stores. You can't go down to Shucks or O'Reilly's to find this stuff. A lot of the stuff is made in-house or it's made in some specialty shops around the United States that it takes a while to get together and to produce. So we won't see the 448 Seafair. I'm really hoping that they're going to be in San Diego. It's a fun team to watch, and I know they're having a lot of fun, and the fans like seeing that out there. Another takeaway is Jeff Bernard. He's back, and he's a trooper. He's a fighter. He's an aggressive driver. I know that Alberto, they're going to be setting him loose a bit more and more, and come final heat time, he's gonna make his name heard. One way or another. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Jane Michael Kelly, he's found some speed in the Graham Trucking. They got some speed in there. They won the Columbia Cup. They were able to pull something up out their sleeve. I expect nothing else on Sunday of Seafair, that they're going to do their best to be out front once again. Also, Jamie Nielsen, his first time out in a few years in the limited class, he's going to be a force to reckon with. In time, a lot of people have nothing but fantastic things to say of him as a driver. He's a lights out driver that's going to impress a lot of people. I think they still need some time to get him used to the machine, and also iron out a few gremlins. And I think hopefully by San Diego or next year, they're going to be pushing it a bit more, and they're going to show off what they have. And finally, Bert Henderson, another lights out driver that's just down on speed, but he's got some tricks up his sleeve. Him with his radio partner Patrick, they're gonna impress some people. I think they're gonna take advantage of some other teams' misfortunes as they did earlier in the year. Hopefully, have a strong finish on Seafair Sunday, but they're gonna show a lot of moves, and they're gonna do a lot of things to finish well and perform well. I want to talk about some predictions for Seafair. I think there's going to be some great racing, some great action. And the qualifying, I think the qualifying is probably going to be about the same. Home Street's going to be top qualifier. They're going to show off their speed. But it's not always the best indicator on who's going to win come Sunday 4 p.m. in the final heat. And Seafair is notorious for having such a rough course. There's a lot of things to take in account. You heard from last episode's interview with Brian Perkins that there's the Genesee Gap, there's parallel rollers, there's different things that you have to take into account on the race course that makes it a extremely rough or difficult course to drive as a racer, and that's going to be a huge equalizer in the final heat, because that's not going to be calm water in that final heat. When you get seven boats on the water, the parallel rollers, any wind that comes up, it's going to be a rough race course. And it's going to take a lot to win that. I predict that Andrew Tate, he's going to repeat this year. He has shown such a phenomenal job, driving skill, of running the boat to its limits and maintaining it there, maintaining fast speeds in very rough conditions. And I think they're going to find a combination for him to come out on top. He's going to get a lot of challenges, though. I think Graham, Homestreet, and Alberto. He's got three other boat race teams that are going to push him and make him earn this. But I think Tate's going to be victorious once again in Seattle. And the last thing I want to say is I hope that all the race teams are going to make it through the weekend in one piece and survive to make it San Diego. We're down to 8 race teams right now. I believe 99.9's talked about not going to San Diego. So H1 can't afford to lose any other boats. Last year, unfortunately, in the Seafair final, the Alberto was cut off by 11 team, went through the air, and it flipped, and it did enough damage that they're still on the shore, they're still in the shop trying to fix the boat. So hopefully all the teams can survive and make it down to San Diego, so there can be a great race to watch down there at Bayfair. But that's all I have for you today for episode 6 of Versatile Talk. I really hope you enjoyed part 2 of our Columbia Cup special. Seafair, it's upon us. It's on the horizon in Seattle. I plan on going down each day in order to get some great interviews as well as hydro news and gossip to share with you. Check back next week to listen in on our Seafair edition. I plan to make another 2-part episode. But don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your podcast player. It's also very helpful for this podcast if you rate and review your experience. By reviewing your experience, it lets me know how you like Fishtail Talk, and it also shows to the other viewers how much you're enjoying this show. You can also check us out on our social media platforms for updates and hydroplane news. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I had a lot of fun at the Columbia Cup and can't wait for Seafair. So until next time, I hope to see you at the races.